Christmas stories with Briscoe and Bradshaw. I would be Bradshaw. That would be the WWE Hall of Famer, Oklahoma's favorite son, Mr. Gerald Briscoe. And we got a Texan on with us today. Southern heavyweight champion, Southern world champion. He's wrestled all over the world. He's got a book out, The Last Ride, Mr. Scott Casey. It's a pleasure to have you on, Scott.
John, it's a do you like to be called John or JBL or XYZ? I don't know.
John's good. I've never been called XYZ. Mr. Briscoe's called me a lot of things I can't repeat.
I know John's that. Good. He's a rotten bastard sometimes, but I love him.
He's from Oklahoma.
Hey, watch your language here, Tex. I'm surrounded by two Texans, so if the language gets a little blue here, it's not my fault. I try my best to control it, make this a family show. But when you have two Texans together, their language automatically goes to the gutter. So we got a guy on here today, Scott Casey, Cowboy Scott Casey, that I've known since his beginning of his career. And he was always one of the pretty lover boys, you know, but man, the guy, when it come down to working, this guy could work, and he got his wings out in West Texas with the Funks and out there. But you know what? I'm not going to tell the story. I'm going to let him tell the story. Scott, kind of take us in before you grow up years. You were an athlete. I don't know what kind of athlete you were. I think you were a hell of a football player from what I recall. And so tell us a little bit about your upbringing and what got you into that pro wrestling.
Well, you know, it all started in Amarillo. It started in a little town called Borger, Texas, up in the northeast corner of Texas. And I would drive my dad nuts to go to the matches. And, you know, he'd break down every once in a while and go. And I saw guys like Paul Bellerjohn lifting the horses. I saw Haystacks Calhoun.
What was that you saw? Who lifted what?
I think his name was Paul Bellerjohn. He was either him or one of the Canadians that would lift a horse. Wow. He had a ladder, and he'd get up on the ladder, and then he had a brace on his back, and he picked the horse up, you know, and the people go nuts, you know. And I thought, man, I'd love to do that, you know. And
I don't mean to cut you off, Scott, but Jerry dated a horse in high school.
I can believe that, but I won't even go.
It was a mare, Don. It was a mare.
But anyway, I mean, guys like that. And I remember seeing Dick Murdoch, and a funny story real quick about Dickie.
Well, we're going to get a lot of Dick Murdoch stories, but tell us just to warm us up on the
mic. Oh, this, you'll laugh your ass off on this one. I mean, you know, the trees here in Arkansas are greener than green, and I was even greener than they were. And my first match was in the ring with Dick Murdoch. And we locked up, and he goes, "Big ol' arm, Greg." I said, "Me or you?" He stood back for me. He said, "Me, ignorance, me." You know, that sounds just like Murdoch. You know, his dad was a wrestler. He was. And Terry. And
did you know his dad, Scott? Did you know Murdoch's dad?
No, I didn't.
Frankie Murdoch. I heard of him. I think he had passed away. Yeah.
Yeah. Dick was for a buggy whipped arms, pot belly, and 6'4", this man could beat the living hell out of anybody, and he knew how to start it, stop it, make it stand still, make it jump up and laugh. I mean, I admired the way Dick worked, and I got to the point where I was taught by Dick, Duke Myers, Terry Funk, Dory Funk Jr., and Bobby Duncan. And wow. Prior to all this, I did hair. I did women's hair, men's hair, and Ray Stevens used to do promos saying, "Yeah, he plays with women's hair and all this stuff." You know, and I thought, well, there goes my career. Anyway, so, but I mean, I learned from the best.
You know, you got your dad to take you to the matches in Amarillo, I suppose.
Yeah, finally.
How old were you at that time?
I was probably about 8 or 9, 10.
So that's when your love for professional wrestling first started growing. That's when you really.
Oh, yeah, really knew absolutely.
So your first matches were in Amarillo, the Funk family was there, of course. Was that before Terry? Was that before Terry and Junior got into business and all Murdoch and all that?
No, they were already in the business. You know, Terry was. Let's see, Terry's 77. I'm 75, so he was in there a few years before I finally got started. I actually met Terry out at Buffalo Lake, which is outside of Amarillo, and he had blonde hair and he was kind of thin and he hadn't filled out yet. But we talked a little bit. He still doesn't remember that because he's just, I'm sitting out here in the hallway and all the kids are gone. Anyway, we got to be friends. And he asked me one time, he said, you want to stay in Amarillo? I said, not really. I said, it's flatter than piss on a platter. And he said, no. He said, you're right. He said, well, would you like to wrestle? I thought about it. I said, yeah, I think it'd be great. He said, well, build yourself up. Well, I went from 180 to 240. And I mean, I blew myself up like a toad, you know.
There now, when you went up to 240, when you got up to 240, when you were an athlete at the time, you said you're 180. You're a big guy. You're a tall guy. And you got a great frame on it. Were you an athlete in high school? Did you play football?
Yeah, I played football in high school. I played in Pascal High School in Fort Worth. Then I came back and went to West Texas State and tore up a knee.
And West Texas State, that's when you were with Frank Goodish, better known as Bruiser Brody, correct?
Yeah. I sure miss Frank. I mean, when I found out he died, I cried like a baby. Because I mean, he was nutter than a fruitcake, or he thought he was.
Tell us a little bit about his college days. How was he crazy? Because I know he had been asked to leave Iowa State University for reasons that we won't discuss on this show.
He probably wanted to whip somebody's ass. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how it happened. He ended up in West Texas with all the outlaws down
there. He went, I think he went to the Redskins for a while, too.
No, that was after West Texas, though.
Oh, yeah. But he was always crazy. I mean, he thought he was. He acted like it. But he and I were the same age. And he used to tell me things, and he'd scream and holler. I'd say, shut the fuck up, Frank. You're not impressing me a bit. And that got over with him, and he appreciated my honesty. I'm surprised he didn't kick the shit out of me, but he didn't. You know, but I mean, what up? He called me up in the middle of the night. Said, Scott, come on, we're going to go do legs. 3 a.m, we're in the gym doing legs. And I'm going, my God, this man's insane. But, it paid off in the long run. It's just like, I remember somebody said, Scott, you'll never be big enough, you'll never be tall enough, never be this or that, and this and that. And I thought, you son of a bitches. And whenever I walked through the curtains of Madison Square Garden to wrestle the Tonga Kid, I said, now you doubting son of a bitches. I said, who's having the last laugh? You know, I'm one of these guys, don't tell me no. Brain surgery, give me the fucking scalpel and stand back and I'll see if I can do it. You know, I mean,
I'm not going to be the patient. So anyway, Scott, take us to Frank Goodish at West Texas thing here. And you're playing football. You had a knee injury and that cut your career short. And that's the time that you wanted to actually roll into professional wrestling, right?
Right.
Frank had the bug bitten Frank yet about wrestling, or was he still in the football wanting to play pro football?
He was quite a guy. You know, he was a journalist. Believe it or not, he worked for the newspapers and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
he actually had a job for the Dallas, Dallas Herald. Dallas Morning News. He's writing articles, sports articles for the Dallas News when he actually got into the business. But okay. Scott, wow. Here we go.
I'm here.
I know you're here. But
we lost you for a second.
That pretty face here.
I was trying to be nice and listen to you. That's all.
We lost your picture. Can you before? Can you do it again?
Well, let me see if I can find it. I got to go to the car because the battery is going low on this thing. Hold on.
I got told you to charge your phone up, John Scott.
I did charge the son of a bitch up, but it, you know, I've been talking to you and gibbly gabbling, you know.
You were gibbly gabbling?
Yeah, that's my own special word.
Oh, I'm glad.
That's.
I'm glad you shared that with us, Scott.
Okay, so, well, I appreciate it. Jerry, you and Jack were one of my two favorite best guys that I ever worked with and enjoyed being around. Y'all are always happy, made me happy.
We're happy people, man. We're around good people, and being around you, Scott, made us smile and made us want to be good.
You know, that's the nicest thing. That's the nicest you have ever been to me. You always were giving me a bad time. I appreciate that.
Well, he does the same thing to me. He does the exact damn thing, same thing to me. He's mean. He's a mean Hokie.
Well, if you look like that, you'd be mean too, you know. But I'm no, I'm just teasing you. You know that, Jerry.
I'm not teasing you, though.
Hold on. Let me get this guy.
There you are.
There you are, Scott Casey.
All right. Hold on.
Hey, put that phone on a dashboard so you don't have to hold it for another 35 minutes.
Well, I can't talk because I can't use my hands. You know?
Well, you can use your hands. You don't have to swing the phone around with it. Are you talking? All right, Scott. Whatever.
There's a this meeting is being recorded for blah blah blah.
Yeah, we lost you again.
Scott, you damn you texted or something, I tell you.
Okay. There you are.
Yeah, but where are you?
Face.
We don't see your face.
We don't see you.
Well, I'm pushing everything but my dick trying to get the right thing here to work. John, you know, that's old farts.
Yeah, he worked for one every week.
Yeah.
But this one's from Oklahoma and knows what the heck he's doing.
I got y'all's, I got your pictures.
Yeah, but we don't have yours. We don't what use that little camera down on the side there with the slash red slash mark through it, and that's a sign like this, if you don't know.
I'm trying to find it, Jerry.
If you touch the screen, the emoji should show up at the bottom. There should be a camera with a line through it. That's what you hit.
John, he don't know what an emoji is.
Wait, so you're on there for a second.
You did it. There you are.
Okay.
Look at you, Scott.
All right, Jerry, do I send you the bill for my gas? I've been wasting it.
All joking aside, send Jerry a bill like for your car, for the gas, and for like a meal and several other things. Just like put it all on a bill, itemize it, and just send it to Jerry. He'll send you like a lot of money. He's rich.
I'd fucking starve to death before I got that. I love you, Jerry.
Watch your language. I'm fighting you for every cuss word. So by the time we get through with this, you'll owe me money.
Okay, that's fine.
He's been fining me forever. He makes me put a dollar in a jar every time. That's what I come up with.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
Yeah, it looks like
he's fining me for cursing because he's a dang Okie.
Looks like he's been taking money out of the jar too, John.
Of course I have.
I don't blame you.
Anyway, Scott, we're talking about Frank Brody, the Frank British, at West Texas State, and okay, you blew your knee out. Now you're romancing the funks to get a job, right? To start brushing.
Yeah, and I finally,
I got a question before you get it. How easy was it to get into that West Texas State?
How easy was it? What?
How easy what? Academically was it to get in one of those Texas colleges like West Texas State?
I mean, what do you have to do?
Make an egg. Make an egg.
Both of you quit talking at the same time. I can't understand both of you getting excited. Just relax. You know, it'll be over in a minute.
Thank you, Scott. I've been saying that for a year now. Okay. Take us to when you're starting to ask. You're finished with West Texas State.
My first match was with Dick Murdoch, right?
Yeah.
Now we're in the dressing room and the old man senior was in there. And John, I don't know whether you ever knew Senior or not, but look at Terry, except a little shorter. He was just as crazy as his father was. Anyway, we're in the dressing room. He said, I want Dick, I want you to hard way. You know, and like an idiot, I sit there, oh, okay, yeah, I know he's going to hit me. So he pulls back. I mean, we get in the ring. Murdoch just potatoes the shit out of my eye, and it's not going anywhere. It's not blooming up, nothing. We get back in the dressing room, and the old man goes, "Yes, son of a bitch." Murdoch's looking at him like a little kid, and he says, "I told you I wanted you to get, you know, make his eye bloom up." He said, like this. He pulls off his ring. Now, picture this. I'm standing here. Murdoch, Terry, and Lord Al Hayes are over here. He rears back to hit me, but instead he caroms off and hits Murdoch, just blew his up, boom. And then he hit Terry, and Murdoch got the message, and he moved out of the way. I mean, I didn't think anything. I thought, I'm leaving the next weekend. I'm going to Florida. I ain't been anywhere east of, I don't know, Tyler, Texas. You know, I mean, and I'm going to go down to Florida. So I go down there with this big guy, and I walk in there, and I meet Eddie Graham, Duke Kiyomuka, and Hiro Matsuda. And they're talking to me, and I said, "Oh, we see the old man got a hold of you." I said, "Well, it wasn't my fault. Murdoch couldn't do his job." And they laughed their ass off at me. They thought I was so funny, you know. But and then after that, I got whacked in the lip and split my lip the same night. I'm having a brain fart. It's so much fun being old. You know, you're going along, all of a sudden it's like you step in a pothole. Boop, boop, and you forget. But anyway,
it don't matter.
Anyway, Eddie Graham, goddamn, I'm all right. Eddie got his lip split, and he said, "Come on, you can ride with me back." He said, "I like split lips." And I mean, they were nuts. You know, these old timers, they didn't give a shit. You know, because they knew eventually we were going to take their place anyway. And it was what a ride. I mean, it really was. You know, I had a lot of fun. And
Florida, was that where you first ran into my brother Jack? Because you knew Jack before you met me.
Handsome Jack, yes. Now, I would always tell him that I could find a girl bigger than whatever he could. And son of a bitch always found one. He didn't do anything with him, but he just found one, and he'd sit there and have a drink with him. And I thought, well, okay, this is the way it's going to be. But I mean, I tell you, Jack and you were so nice to me. You really were. And
wait a minute. You're ruining my reputation. You're saying I'm nice to somebody, Scott.
Well, you were. Hell.
I was young then.
You remember when you and I danced in Lubbock, Texas together?
No, tell me that story. I think I was down on Texas. We were hot item there for a while, John.
There you go. But we had a lot of fun, you know.
Wait a minute. You gotta talk about this. What about you dancing with Jerry?
I don't remember if I put him over, he put me over, or we went through 30 minutes. I'm not real sure. I know it was an easy match, you know, because I told him I'd leave the ring. He could wrestle himself. He hurt me. He started laughing.
I think you were champion. I think you were Western States champion. So, of course, I had to do the honors.
Well, yeah, somebody had to do it.
Well, I did, because you were Western States champion. Who did you took that belt from Brody, didn't you? How did that come? Is that?
Oh, yes. You won't believe this story. Brody was going to go to Japan, so they wanted him to drop the belt to either one of the Funks, Ricky Romero, or Dick Murdoch. He said, no. They said, what? He said, no, I'm not dropping it to you guys. He said, I don't like any of you. He looked at me, he said, I want Scott to have it. I'm sitting there going, die. Boy, I'm going to get my ass kicked. He said, no. He said, I want you to have it. We go to Corpus Christi. He said, I want you to beat me right in the middle with a sunset flip. Who the fuck's going to believe him? But that's what he wanted. And that's what I beat him. And I took the belt. then I went back and wrestled you. But it was just, oh, I got to tell you this real quick. We were leaving the Corpus Christi, and there was a huge thunderstorm there. Terrific. We go out to the parking lot, and we see these lights shooting off up into the air. The, honest to God, guys, this is the truth.
Well, this is the story that we've been waiting for. This is the Wahoo story?
No.
I'm sorry.
All right. So I'm riding with Wahoo and me, Mil Mascaris, and Tom Jones. We're coming now down from San Antonio down to Corpus. There's mile markers, 164, 165, so on.
And there's nothing out in that area.
No, nothing but piss and water. But anyway, we get out there, and are you drinking beer over there? I hope so.
No, I wish I was. I'm drinking a Monster Energy.
Shit. Anyway.
You were.
I wish I was.
Anyway.
We've both been sober, Scott, for the whole year now. You're going to drive us to drink today.
That's right.
Well, I tell you what, if we get together, I'll get you drunk. Tell you more.
And you, by the way, you beat Stan Hansen's record too.
What? Say that again.
No, you beat Stan Hansen's record on trying to get on the air.
Somebody.
So anyway, John's got to set this story up here. So let John set it up, and he's going to tell it to you.
Well, this is a story you driving and seeing something that's quite extraordinary, right? This is a once-in-a-lifetime adventure.
As God is my savior, it was a UFO. And I don't remember the mile marker. We came over this hill. Now, listen, this thing is hovering over the ground. Mascaris is talking Spanish. Tom Jones, oh, Lord, oh, Lord, oh, God, oh, Lord. Wahoo says, I think I'll stop and see if we can book them on the next show. I said, if you get your fat ass out of the car, I said, I'll leave you. He started laughing. Gentlemen, it was hovering over the ground, and these lights were shooting around like this, shooting around it. And I swear, and I talked to Mascaris the first time in years. I saw him at the gathering in Charlotte. And I said, do you remember? He said, the UFO. I remember it very well, my friend. And I went, oh, fuck. I mean, I almost shit myself. I, especially when Wahoo said he wanted to get out and book him on the next show. Oh, God. But anyway.
What happened to the spaceship?
I don't know. Maybe it went to a 7-Eleven. I fucking don't know. All I know is that we got the hell out of there. I was not about to sit there and let something come out there and zap.
It did hover along the road there with you, or it just, what did you stop? You didn't stop the car and let Wahoo out.
We slowed down, and I said, Wahoo, if you stop this car and get out, I'm going to leave your fat ass. And that's exactly, and I was scared to death of him. I figured he'd kill me when I said
that. Well, you know, you could have done the world a favor at that time and stopped the car and let Wahoo get in that damn spaceship. We would, if Wahoo would have got in there, those aliens would have surrendered in no time at all, because he would have chopped every one of them to Hades.
Oh, anyway, but we left, and we came back the next week. You know, it was a weekly thing. We came back.
With the UFO, the weekly thing?
It was gone.
It was done. That was it.
And I'm telling you, that was the scariest I've ever been in my life. I thought, if that door starts sliding open, I'm running in the field or something. I'm going to get away from it.
They must have done one of those little scams that there's no intelligent life for this automobile. We'll go on. We'll wait till the next one.
If you ever see Mascaris, you can ask him. Now, Tom Jones is dead. Mascaris, alive, and I'm alive, and Wahoo is dead.
So there's only two of you left that can verify this.
Right. Absolutely.
Maybe there's something to that.
Well, Mascaris, you know, he's not known to be a big bullshitter. He'd tell you the way.
No, he's not. No,
he's a good guy.
So what all did right. it look like? Was it a saucer?
It was kind of like saucer, but it looked kind of long. and the on the outside they had lights going around like this. And
what color were the lights?
Different colors: red, green, orange, blue, purple, you name it. They were. I thought somebody's pulling a rib on us. But
was,
no.
was it solid? Was there any noise to the thing?
Was there any what
noise? Did you hear anything?
If we did, it was behind me because
I was. It was behind you. So you were the fastest of the two people.
Absolutely.
So you outran a UFO on a West Texas desert road.
Don't give me that bullshit. No, we were still in the car.
But your car outran a UFO, Scott. Follow me here. It's difficult. I know you're from Texas, but follow me.
John, how do you put up with this bullshit?
That's what I want to know. I have no idea. And I've done it for 30 years.
Wow.
Oh, he hired me, Scott. He hired me at WWE, and ever since then, I've had to put up with it. I'm glad that a UFO didn't land in Oklahoma.
Oh, well, shit. They'd have been selling hot dogs for $1 a piece.
We got a curio shop that we would have been sold to all kinds of souvenirs. We would have monetized that thing, Scott. For you that don't know, because you're monetized means you make money off of it.
you see what I mean, Scott? That's what I got to put up with.
Pitiful. Jerry, I've got a picture of me and Jack, and I don't know if you're in it or not. We're in Japan with Moose Morawski. Remember Moose?
I remember Moose, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but I just...
So what's that you have to do with the UFO, Scott?
Nothing. I just when you get
so
my...
So what happened with the UFO? Finish the story about the UFO.
It left, and we left, you know.
It left before you guys did. Now, you wouldn't let Wahoo out. You must have slowed down when you saw it.
We did slow down. He slowed down. He was driving. Yeah, well, Wahoo was driving. It was his Cadillac. But I told him, I said, if you stop and get out, I'm leaving your fat ass. And that was the truth. You know, I mean, hell, you know, none of us had any guns on us or anything like that. And I didn't want to get killed or, you know, we might have been on Mars or Saturn or something by the time they got through with us. I don't know.
Main event on Mars. That'd been the first, Scott.
Yeah. Anyway.
Would you Wahoo would want you to put him over, I'm sure.
Say what?
Wahoo would have wanted you to put him over.
If you had a gun, would you have shot one of the aliens?
If he'd have come at me, yeah. Hell yeah. Wouldn't you? Would you want some little green thing coming up on you, grabbing your testicles or whatever?
I mean, how do you know? How do you know he was green?
Well, that's just what they call them all. They're green or gray or something like that.
Now, Wahoo was always armed. It was probably in the trunk, thank goodness.
He had a shotgun in the trunk. That's another story I can tell you about.
Well, tell us. Funny. Tell us Wahoo and the shotgun.
Wahoo and I were coming back from Del Rio, Texas, to San Antonio, and he stops. He says, "There's a deer there. We can get some backstrap." I didn't know what the hell backstrap was. He said, "But it's really good." You know, I didn't ever hunt or anything like that. And blam, he had the shotgun. He pulled it, stopped, pulled over, blew it, shot the deer. He's laying on the ground. He said, he never called me Scott or Casey. It was always motherfucker. And I don't know why. And it used to piss me off. But I'm not going to tell some big crazy Indian that you can't call me anything. So anyway, he said, grab the deer and put him in the trunk. I said, you grab your fucking deer and put him in the trunk. He said, there's blood all over it. Well, he's dead, isn't he? I said, I don't know. Wahoo goes back there, grabs the deer. The thing starts reacting. And he looks like he was in a knife fight, and the only one didn't have a knife. Honestly, God, there was blood all over him from head to toe. I said, that's why I did. He said, drive, motherfucker. All right, I drove us home. So it was always something funny going on with him.
How was the backstrap?
Delicious.
So you found out what backstrap was for
yeah, the meat on the spine and all that crap, you know, and made deer chili and all that. Oh, Lord of mercy, it was that good.
Wahoo knew how to dress the deer and how to fix that venison chili. I mean, I've had that with Wahoo, and he could prepare that very good.
He was a man's man, I'll tell you that.
So, Scotty, let's move over to Joe.
Hey, Jerry, wait a minute. Scott, did you tell the boys about the UFO?
I told everybody about it. I even wrote it in my book.
Yeah. What'd the boys say? Had they ever seen one?
Some of them had, some of them hadn't. And I just, it's the truth. I said, ask Maskers. He'll tell you the same thing. He said, see? He said it was the truth, you know, and Tom Jones, until he died, he said the same thing.
Which of the boys had seen a UFO?
Terry.
Terry Funk doesn't count. He's an alien. He actually is an alien.
He was a product of that UFO.
I talked to Terry daily.
Just
to let him know somebody cares, you know. And I'm just kind of hanging out like that. I said, well, quit playing with your Peter and do something else. Oh, you're funny, you know.
Last time I talked to Terry, I told him I wanted to come and pick him up, and we're going to run to Mexico like those guys. And one flew over the cuckoo's nest. Next time I called him, his daughter said, would you quit telling Terry that you're going to meet him out in the parking lot because he's wanting to go out in the parking lot?
It's so bad. You know, I mean, I just ask him how he's doing, what's going on, and have you been out? And he's got a friend named Ronnie Mankin that lives up there, and Ronnie always takes him out to eat. And what was his name? Mankind. Well, I can't think of his real name.
Cactus Jack.
Yeah. But yeah. Anyway.
Mick Foley.
Yeah. Mick would went by there to get him, and he took him out to eat and stuff. You know? And he appreciates the guys calling. You get a chance, give him a call.
I call him a lot. Like I said, I was asked not to call him for a while.
I was asking, has anyone called you? No, and I talked to somebody. Yeah, I just called him yesterday. Goofy bastard. Anyway, but
that's terrible.
Well, you know, he's 77. He'll be 78. June, July, no. Somewhere around there. But he's a good man. He really is.
So that was your only experience with the UFO, Scott?
Do what now?
That was your only experience with a UFO?
Nope.
Wait a minute.
What?
More encounters?
Listen to me.
I'm listening.
You know where Paladura Canyon is?
No, but that Jackson probably does.
I know exactly 18. Where it is.
Okay.
He got his first one there. Paladura.
You remember the lighthouse?
John lost his virginity there, Scott.
Well, good. Yeah, yeah. I hope so.
He was 20. He was 24 years old.
Yeah. But anyway.
See what I got to put up with, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, it's pitiful, isn't it?
It's awful.
He's got my word to Canyon now. And UFO.
It's by Canyon, Texas.
Anyway.
Up in there.
A friend of mine, Andy McCullough, there in Amarillo, I don't even know if he's still around or dead or alive, whatever. But anyway, we climbed the lighthouse and we get up there. I said, can we get back down? He said, not tonight, you can't. We're going to spend the night there. And we did cross ties with the rope and we slid under them so we wouldn't roll off the side. It was like 400 or 500 feet down from where we were. So we're laying there. And you hear the cows mooing and birds chirping and whatever. All of a sudden, a red flash came right over us with this intense heat and went straight up. And the time I looked up, it was gone. And I said, Andy, what was that? He said, that, my friend, was a UFO. I said, you're shitting me. He said, no, That was the first time. And the heat, it felt like it does now when it's hot. Except twice as hot. It was unbelievable. And I said, let's get out of here. He said, we can't. You know what shale rock is? It's rock that lays right on top of each other. But you don't want to try to climb on it whenever you're in the dark.
That's why.
Because you could fall off and kill yourself. So we stayed up there. But the rest of the night, there was no cows mooing. There was no birds chirping. Nothing. And I think I slept about 2 weeks looking around thinking maybe it'll come back. I didn't want to get carried off.
So you stayed there 2 weeks?
No, I said 2 winks.
Oh, 2 winks.
I said I didn't sleep for 2 winks. I was scared. You know, but outside of that, that's the only 2 times I ever saw it. But I'm surprised, as much as we used to travel up and down the roads, that I haven't seen any more. You know, back then, it was riding with 4 guys. Each of you are paying part of the trans and bologna blowouts and cold beer and whiskey and whatever. And I got to tell you a funny story with Brute Bernard, Sweet Hansen. Did you leave something in there?
Yes, I did.
Okay, hold on. I got to pull back. The old gal left her whatever in her medicine. All right.
Is that the pharmacist that helped you get online here?
No. That's my girl. Okay. That's my old girl. She's the same age as I am, too, 74.
And now you're getting in trouble, Scott.
I know that. But what the fuck else?
Where are you going, Scott?
I am going back up so she can get her medicine. She had that sometimer's disease, and she forgot it.
No, I didn't forget it. I get dropped out of my purse.
All right. Hold on. See, when you get to be an old fart, you can have these problems, too.
No, I hope I get there, Scott. I hope I get as old as you.
You're as old as I am, you miserable prick.
You're language, man.
Well, now Scott, we lost your picture again.
I know, because everything went ass backwards.
You know, when you put the car in reverse, John, it shows you the rear view, so that's what happened.
There you are.
that was a better picture before, Scott.
Shut up, Jerry. Goddamn Indian. No.
Do you think maybe somehow you attract UFOs?
Look at you, smart ass.
Wait a minute.
That's a logical question here. You know, John has never, he's not quieted up there with you and I, but he's got a few miles on him out in those West Texas roads and everything. And,
oh, he's still got dark hair. Miserable prick. I hate him.
Who?
What are you doing with him? Do you diet or how old are you now, John?
55. I got a little gray, not much. No, I don't dye. I don't dye. That's my hair. I use Rogaine.
I don't bend over like that, John.
Does it work? It wouldn't work on me. That's for damn sure.
But I don't dye.
Okay. Well, that's all
so
right.
So anyway, you attract UFOs. You were sitting with 2 guys that put on millions and millions of miles, coast to coast, border to border, and worldwide, and never seen a UFO. And you've had the honor of witnessing 2 UFOs. That's quite a remarkable feat, Chuck.
As God is my witness.
Well, I believe you. I believe you. You never lied to me.
I believe you too. I just wondered if something about you attracted UFOs, maybe.
My good looks? Well, forget that.
Yeah, you did forget that a long time ago.
Yeah, well. That's the way it went. I was pretty back then, though.
Yeah, you're pretty. Okay, pretty boy. Take us to Joe Blanchard and Tully, your favorite guy there. So tell us a little bit about your matches. Tully was champion. Joe brought you in to win that title, right, from Tully. And you guys, then you went on. And well, I'll let you tell. Tell me the story.
They call me. I walked away from wrestling for about 2 weeks, 3 weeks,
And I get a call from Wahoo and from Joe. And they said, we'd like for you to come down and maybe help us out. We're trying to get Southwest Wrestling off the ground. I said, okay. Like an idiot. And I, they flew me down, put me up. I stayed at Wahoo's place. And the first time I get in the ring with Tully, he turned me babyface, or I turned babyface simply because that's what the people liked. And away we went. I mean, we did some hellacious business down there in San Antonio. And Joe was just a really, really nice man. I miss him terribly. And he always took good care of me. And I get out of the ring anyway, and he goes, Scott, you're our new babyface. Tully, you're the heel. He said, good. Tully was a prick at the time. I don't know. I heard different stories. I'm not going to say them. But I know that, what?
No parking.
I don't give a shit. No, she's telling me no parking. I'm sitting there. Do you think I care?
You're a senior citizen. You can park anywhere you want to.
You're absolutely right. I'm going to get over here. I'm going to try to get over here.
Just tell them JBL told you to park anywhere you want to. And you'll send JBL dollar bills to
it. Hold on. Let me. I can't walk and talk at the same time.
We got the dog in there too?
Yeah.
This is their family trip then, right?
You don't have any aliens in there, do you?
Anyway, no. You're getting as bad as your cohort there. Anyway.
No, I know. He's rubbing off on me, Scott. It's not my fault.
When did you start up in were you in the WWF or were you WWE when you were up there?
Both. Mr. Briscoe is the one that hired me back in December of 1995. Wow. In WWF then. And then we lost a lawsuit to a panda and had to change her name to WWE.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm trying to think how I wanted to put this. I went there and we started doing business. And Eddie Mansfield, you remember Eddie Mansfield, guys?
Right, Eddie Mansfield, yeah.
And
Eddie was the hot baby face or heel?
He was the hot heel, and I was the baby face. And we did more fucking business than you can imagine.
You guys had to record the old Freeman Coliseum after years and years, right?
Yep, we did. There was I don't know, 5,000 or 10,000 people that couldn't get in because they didn't have any room for them. And we just, and Eddie, once in a while I'll talk to him and he still says, they'll never make another match like what we had.
What was the match over? What was the angle that got you guys so hot, Scott?
Well, we did a hair versus hair match. You know, they're not going to let the baby face get his hair cut, you know.
Is that still a tripod radio?
Yeah, I'm still talking on the radio these days. Just sit there and smoke your cigarette and give me hell. We'll stop somewhere and get you a beer.
Okay. Yeah.
You get these old broads, I swear to God, they just want to rule the world.
You're going to get killed, Scott.
Huh?
You're going to get killed. Tell us the story about the hair match. How did the hair match come about?
Well, Eddie called me everything but a lesbian on TV. Every time he turned around, he was just bad-mouthing me going on. And his tenacity and his thoroughness as far as being a babyface actually finally caught on, and he could not go anywhere. People were trying to whip his ass and everything else. And when I was in the Carolinas, I learned how to sell. I learned the art of selling, and it stuck with whenever I got with Eddie. And he just compounded it. Each time he was on TV, it was just over and over and over and over again. It it was one of these things where, goddamn, Scott, will you kill him before we do? And it finally got over, and Joe came up with a hair versus hair match. Well, actually, it was probably Wahoo and Tully. And it's so funny because they had Eddie and me over at Wahoo's house, and he said, all right, Scott, we're having a hair match, and you're going to lose. And I went, oh, shit. He started laughing and said, no. He said, Eddie's going to lose.
Take your cap off. Take your cap off.
I still
lost. You did lose the match. Eddie still got a full head of hair.
What time it is?
Yeah. It doesn't matter what time it is. I'm talking to these guys. You're cut off with beer if you don't shut up. She's giving me hell. Anyway, I mean, we can go on for hours on all this crap. I mean, I had so many things. I've got to tell you the story about Wahoo and me and Tom Jones, and I think Mascaris was with us too. We did our TV there in San Antonio. It went on for 12 fucking hours. We never had a break. It was just, crazy. So we get through, we go to Diamond Jim's, a bar there, and they had this like 9-foot white polar bear stuffed, and we'd sit there and drink, and Wahoo's get drunk and say, I'm going to scalp the bear, crazy shit. Anyway, we're talking and carrying on, and all of a sudden, I look around, there's no Wahoo. And I thought, the motherfucker went off and left us. And Wahoo was, let me stop right here and say, Wahoo was this kind of person. If a little bit's good, then a whole bunch has got to be great. It don't matter what the hell's going on, right?
Right.
So we go, we're sitting there, and we get a ride home. And here's Wahoo's black Cadillac with the Wahoo plate on it. And he's got the headlights are still on. The door's open. The front door of the place is open. And I'm going, oh, shit. Wonder what happened. We go in the house, and I'm the first one in. And I step and shut up. Huh? She hates this toy. Anyway, so there's three piles of foam on the floor. And I reached down, and I went, oh. There's shit under each one of them. Honest to God, folks, this is the truth. I wrote it in my book. If you'll buy the damn thing,
What's the name of your book?
One Last Ride.
One Last
Tale
Ride.
Tale of Cowboy Scott Casey.
Is it on Amazon?
So, no, they take too much money. I just sell them from my place.
From your place. So how can they get that book, Scott?
Well, they can go on PayPal or what is it, Vroom?
Yeah.
Something like that. And or they can just send me a check.
Just send you a check.
Yeah, for $40. And I've sold a ton of them. And people have all said they liked them, But anyway, so we go in and we see two other piles of foam. And I hear the shower running. So I thought, well, maybe he's in the shower. He might have shit himself. So I go in there, his boots are in the shower, his pants are down around the boots. There's about $300 in cash floating in the water. Mm-hmm. And I went, what the hell? And we're hollering for Wahoo. We go back to his room. Now here's a 285-pound man, and he's underneath his bed. And he's going, oh, motherfucker, do something. Oh, and he had a girlfriend who was a nurse, and I called her. Her name was Sandy. She called, I told her, I said, the crazy bastard did something. She came over there and said, what did you do, Wahoo? He said, oh, I'm too goddamn fat and I wanted to lose weight. Now listen to this. He took 3 Phenamints, 2 LASIK shots and something else and liked to shit himself to death. Honest to God.
Back his story up, Scotty, because I've had Wahoo tell me that story himself. And it's exactly like you said.
I mean, honest to God, I mean, you can't imagine a 285-pound man and his girlfriend had to give him.
I don't want to go on about it. I can back that story up because I heard the exact story from the exact same way, told the same way, and same ending from Wahoo himself.
Oh, he's lucky he didn't kill himself. He just had enough tenacity and even strength. He stayed with it, and she gave him some.
That's just. It's like a Texan, though. He thinks he can take all these pills, lose weight instead of doing it the right way and working hard. You know, you guys always take shortcuts, all you Texans do.
Yeah, well, all those years playing football and then whatever. I guess he just didn't want to work out like that anymore.
Yeah. Hey, Scotty, you got a great story. When you were starting with the great legend Johnny Valentine. John Valentine in North Carolina, when you were first starting in the business, when you were doing a favor for John on TV in North Carolina.
Tell me the name again. My
John Valentine. John Valentine. Johnny Valentine.
Oh, yes. I'm in the curtains. We're at High Point, North Carolina. And George Scott was a booker. He said, "Scott, do you know anything about John?" I said, "No." I said, "Well, fight for your life." He pushed me through the curtains. I went, "Fuck, what? What are you talking about?" I thought, what happened to the word work? I get out there in the ring. And I'm sure Jerry's had a taste of him too, God rest his soul. He beat me from the shoulders, the chest, the stomach, the legs. And I'm sitting there thinking, "You motherfucker." I said, "And I'm probably 1,500 miles away from Texas, but I ain't going to let no son of a bitch beat on me without giving him some potatoes." Angelo Martinelli was the referee, and he backed John up towards the ropes. I was on the apron, about half out of my mind. I get up, and I thought, "I'm going to whale the piss out of you," and I did. I hit him so fucking hard, his legs, they kind of buckled. And he goes down and he gets back up, and I thought, "Oh, here he comes. I'm gonna have to fight him." And all of a sudden he started working. He just wanted, back then the old timers wanted to know if you had any guts to get in there and fight some big son of a bitch and get through it or work with it. And that's what happened. He said, "I love it. Do it again."
Yeah.
I thought, "Shit, I'm gonna die." And I told Greg, his son, about it. And Greg laughed. He said, "That sounds like Dad." Yeah. But anyway, I mean, all the people in the audience that never knew who John Valentine was, if you never had the pleasure of watching this man work, I watched him one night do a match. He stepped on the first step of the stairs going up into the ring, and the people started yelling. He stepped back down, up, down. He did that for 10 minutes, and the people were going out of their mind. And I said, these guys today, they think they know how to sell or work. They don't. I mean, you do, but you don't. It was a whole different time and a whole different era. And Jerry, you'll back me up on this because you wrestle some of the tough guys too. I mean, I wrestled Sweet Hansen, Brute Bernard, Demolition, I can't remember the real names, but anyway, the two guys that buried somebody and somebody else. Anyway, and these guys taught you timing, how to sell, how to walk, talk, look. And I thought, wow, is this what it's all about? But I mean, back then it was. You had to know what you were doing in there. That's why we did so much business in San Antonio with Eddie and I. But I mean, the timing had to be impeccable. You had to know what you're doing, and you had to know when you made a comeback, you better know that you're going to get the piss whaled out of you if you didn't. Frank Morrell, an old timer, remember Frank?
Oh, Frank, yeah.
Yeah. He called a high spot that was about 8 parts going in it, and I screwed up the last one. He gets me up there in the ring and asleep, and he said, "If you do it again," he said, "I'll kill you." He said, "I'll beat the shit out of it." We had about a 20 different high spots in this one match. And I thought, I am not going to let this big bastard kill me. So I got there and I remembered him. you know, because sometimes you forget, you know, you get these brain farts and things happen. I wrestled Ivan Koloff one time in Florida, and he said, "Scott, what's the finish?" I said, "What?" I told him, he said, "I had a brain fart, you know." But I mean, it just happened, you know. They don't know how to work today like they used to, but they're making a hell of a lot more money than we ever made. But, and God bless them, you know, we paved the way for them, and I'll get off my soapbox here, but I mean, it was, you learned a lot. You learned, I mean, you just had to.
Well, the great thing about that, Scott, was you got to travel territory to territory and take on guys at the top position in each territory. And each little territory had different styles, even though the same basic moves and same basic heat and comeback, but how you presented it and everything. And everybody was different. That was what, so the learning tree at our time. And if you traveled around these different, you got to learn stuff, you know, and that's, now you're working with the same style every day, every night. So it takes a lot of that away from them. And so they didn't have the benefits that we had of working with all these different guys.
Yeah, what is it?
Hold on, I gotta take care of the liquor store. The woman wants a drink.
Hold you on. Hadn't been already?
I hadn't yet. Let me get.
Well, hey, Scott, hey, we'll let you go. You've given us very generously a lot of your time, so we can't thank you enough for doing that. We know we got to run and do what you got to do.
I gotta tell you, I got one quick story I gotta tell you.
All right, let's hear it.
Do you know who Bruce Swayze is?
Oh yeah, beautiful Bruce.
And he was related to Patrick Swayze. Bruce was a shit disturber, and I love him to death, and I talk to him every day. He's the only man I ever knew.
He's a great guy, John.
He is. He's the only man I ever knew that could make $1 million selling rubber bands. But they make they net over 20 million a year in rubber bands. So I could show you a picture. If I could, I can't do it on here because you'd be in Xanadu by the time I got there. Anyway, Bruce and I are sitting in the back seat, and both of us, we're about 230, 240, something like that. Not that big. But here's Brute Bernard, 290. Sweet Hansen, 340. Big, big, big men. And we had the baloney blowouts. Back then, if you don't know what that is, John, we all would stop at 7-Eleven, pitch in and get bologna cheese, whatever, and a case of beer, and everybody would split it. That's the way it went. So we get back in the car, and Bruce says, "Watch me fuck with Brute." Now, Brute's about 3 cents short of a nickel sometimes, and he was just... Bruce goes, are we home yet? No. A couple of minutes later, are we home yet? No. He keeps doing this, and all of a sudden, we're going down the road. Now we're in Swede's. I forget what they call the kind of car, but anyway, he throws the bologna and cheese and everything up in there, and he goes, "Cocksucker! I tell you 20 times." He's French Canadian. He says, "I kill you." He's strangling the shit out of Bruce. And Bruce is laughing his ass off. And I'm trying to pull him over. We stop in the middle of the freeway. Honest to God, this happened. We stop. Cars are whizzing by us. Sweet gets out of the car, gets in the back, pulls Brute off of Bruce.
Well, there you have it, Jerry.
Oh, man, I couldn't have gone any better. So we'll have to tune in to part two.
That's right, to see if Swayze got killed.
Yeah. Well, he's still breathing, but Bruce, we'll see him out at the Cauliflower Alley celebration coming up in whenever that is. And probably at the George Tragus Luthers celebration up in Waterloo, Iowa at the Dan Gable Museum up there, which you've been honored there. And you're being honored at folks at JBL and what is Mike Mazurka Award. And you guys that don't know Mike Mazurka, he was a pioneer in this business. he was one of the first wrestlers to become a major movie star. And for some reason, they see those traits in John. So the CAC is going to award John. So I'm going to be out there. I'm going to harass the hell out of my friend. So everybody join us at the George Reagan Blue Fans Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa. And most of all, at the Cauliflower Alley Convention in Las Vegas, Nevada, where John's going to accept the Mike Mazurki Award.
Yeah, and quite an honor. I got to go into the new Tragos Fez Hall of Fame, which you inducted me several years ago, which is quite an honor as well. And, of course, I got the wonderful honor of inducting you and your brother into the WWE Hall of Fame. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to being out in Vegas. Maybe Bruce Swayze will be out there and can finish the story of whether Brute Bernard ever got hold of him or not.
And we promise our listeners that a beautiful Bruce is out there. We'll do a special with Bruce and have him continue this story.
Absolutely. And that was Scott Casey. As you can see, he was he drove from Arkansas into Louisiana to get better Wi-Fi. He actually had to go into a hospital and ask a person there how to get on the Zoom call. So we had to download a Zoom app, get on the Zoom call, and got on with it. So you see, we had a few technical difficulties, but not due to a lot of hard work on Scott Casey's part, who drew a ton of money, by the way, in Joe Blanchard's territory with Eddie Mansfield.
He set the territory on fire from everything I've read and heard. I remember back in those days that Scott was one of these great underrated talents, John. Every territory had these guys that were just fantastic, and all they needed was somebody to get confidence in them and get behind them and really give them that touch. And Joe Blanchard, one of the most respected promoters in the business at that time, saw that in Scott and gave him that touch and gave him that push that we all need to get over. And man, it worked. Like I said, they were setting records, every night. They were at Old Freeman Coliseum there in San Antonio and packed that place out every week. And if the Saddle Dome or the Superdome, whatever that dome is out in Texas, had been built at that time, they probably would have packed out because it was one of those deals where more people were turned away than was allowed in the arena. So this guy is the real deal, man. And he's just one of those unsung heroes that we like to bring forward on our show and give them the platform to tell their stories.
And as you can see, an incredible personality. And like you said, there were guys who were huge stars in certain territories that a lot of people today may or may not have heard of. But in the day, they were as hot as they could be, just like he and Eddie Mansfield were just as hot as they could be in Joe Blanchard's territory, which, by the way, Joe Blanchard had USA Network first before Vince. Then they lost the TV, and Vince ended up picking up. When Vince started taking over the wrestling world, one thing he did was he got assets. He got USA Network, he got the Georgia Championship Wrestling, TBS, which made the Briscoes rich, and I don't know about famous, they already were famous. but he's also buying up talent too, Piper and Hogan, those guys. But one of the gems that he bought was USA Network. And that was all Joe Blanchard, who was actually there first, a USA Network before Vince.
Yeah, it was quite a run back in there, and that territory just was smoking hot. I mean, a lot of guys really wanted to go there, but it was so small that only a select few could get in there. And that Wahoo McDaniels was a booker there, and Wahoo booked every major territory in the country. So, and Tully and Joe, we talk about Tully so much. His dad, John, was just he was all conference football player at Kansas University, plus all American wrestler at Kansas. So he was a two sport star. And as John, keep up with anything. Plus he graduated. So keeping up with your academics and being a two sport star, you gotta be sharp. And Joe Blanchard was one of the most respected and honorable men that you ever come across in your life. You meet these guys, you hear all this stuff, you get goosebumps sometimes. I actually was one of Joe Blanchard, one of these guys, because of his background, being an amateur All-American and a great football player. When I met him, it was meeting a star. And Mike, I got goosebumps from meeting him. But what a wonderful man he is.
Yeah, a few guys you meet, that you just think that guy's a star. That guy's a stud. And it's cool when you get to meet people like that. When you haven't ever met them before, or you get to meet them, you may have seen them, but you finally get to sit down and have a conversation with them.
That's awesome. Well, we you know, we got to thank Scott again, you know, and for taking his time. I mean, this guy went out of his way to share his story with us. So we really appreciate Scott's effort and his girlfriend's effort, too, of getting him online. And the pharmacist in the hospital.
That's right.
That she was busy saving lives, but she recognized Scott Casey being from that area and dropped everything she was doing. So probably 3 or 4 people dropped dead because of those podcasts.
Well, he went to an emergency room. It was an emergency.
Yeah.
He had to be on the show.
Yeah. So here we are, folks. Thank you. And we'll see you next week with Storage Whip, Briscoe, and Bradshaw.